2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. As always, thanks for tuning in. Make sure you follow all of our coverage on Twitter at KSL Sports. You can read us at kslsports.com. You can find me on Twitter at benshoops.com. Got a fun show for you today. Longtime Utah Jazz assistant coach Gordy Chase is going to join us, giving us a breakdown on the preseason, what we've seen from the Jazz, and then, of course, what to expect coming up this year from the team, including the next three games as the Jazz get ready to kick off the season against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Wednesday. All right, let's welcome in our next guest. He's the longtime Utah Jazz assistant coach. You can find him on Twitter at GChiesa. Oh my. As we get you ready for the season, it is Coach Gordy Chiesa. Coach, how are you?
Ben, I'm doing well. Thank you.
Concern level for the Jazz after losing four straight against NBA competition in the preseason?
Marginal. The preseason is basically trying to get your bench ready to play in NBA games. And so the record is really no indication of when the real games start for the Jazz tomorrow night against OKC here in Salt Lake City. Now, with that said, their defense has been slow as far as urgency, and that's one thing the Jazz have to improve. So that 1-4 record really has no effect on the long term as far as the Jazz.
So as far as the bad defense, and they were the worst defense to the preseason, giving up 117 points or whatever it was throughout the four games against NBA competition, is that concerning? Quinn Snyder said it was definitely adversity they were facing, but he didn't necessarily seem concerned about it.
Well, a concern would be if the main guys were out there all the time. So again, they're mixing and matching during the games as far as trying to see what combinations work, and also just generally speaking, schematically, if the younger guys are able to comprehend what they're doing. Now, if Rudy was out there for 34 minutes and Donovan Mitchell, they'd be much more alarming. So that's part of it. But defense all starts with, besides effort, a lot of it's positional and just also being in a stance. And that's something that all teams and individual players can improve on, positionally in a stance and be ready to react and recover.
Neither Bojan Bogdanović or Mike Conley, really even Ed Davis, struggled at times. He had some uncharacteristically low rebounding numbers throughout the preseason. I think the fact that it's all three new guys that struggled gives me or lends credence to the idea that they're just trying to figure out what Quinn's asking, and Quinn asks a lot, and so maybe it's hard to pick up. But once it clicks in, it seems like everyone really succeeds in this system. Do you get that impression, or do you think one guy struggled specifically because it might not be a good fit?
All three are tremendous fits because Mike Conley gives the Jazz a true playmaker and a timely shot maker. Ed Davis backs up Rudy as an interior defensive player and per minutes played an elite rebounder. And Bojan Bogdanović is a knockdown shooter. But with that said, with Bojan Bogdanović, a huge fact for him is that him getting the ball in rhythm. So it'll take some time to try to move his body around to get himself ready to roll in rhythm. So he's the guy that Ed Davis and Michael Conley will have the biggest adjustment.
It does seem like Joe Ingles is going to be a player that comes off the bench for the Jazz, and he's looked very comfortable doing that. And I don't know if every NBA player has looked comfortable doing that historically, especially when they've started as much as Joe has, but that seems like a natural fit.
Natural fit because as a second unit performer, he'll have the ball more than make plays. When Mike Conley's out there and Donovan Mitchell, he'll still make plays, but not at the ratio that he would when he's part of the second unit. And he's really a playmaker and a play starter and a timely shot maker. So he's all the three as far as being able to components of scoring a basket or passing an assist pass for his team. So off the bench, it's smart for the Jazz to use him. The question is going to be, who's going to be their, quote, I don't want to say power forward, I'll call him a stretch forward. So is it Bogdanović, you slide him over to four, and do you start Royce O'Neal, or do you play Jeff Green at four and keep Bojan Bogdanović as a knockdown three-man? That's going to be the question.
So looking at the Jazz now, let's shift our attention a little bit to the opening of the season. They take on the Oklahoma City Thunder coming up Wednesday. That is the season opener. Thunder totally different this year than what they looked like last year. No Paul George, no Russell Westbrook. I actually think people are sleeping a little bit on them because they do have a lot of talent. Danilo Gallinari is a good player. Steven Adams, we know, is a good player. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who they got in that Paul George trade, is very good. And they have Chris Paul, who's a future Hall of Famer, and at worst knows how to run a team with all that different talent on it.
Very much. Last year, the Thunder go 49-33, and they're the sixth seed. That's the good part. But they got knocked out by the Trailblazers in an ugly 4-1, which makes the third consecutive elimination in the first round. So that's where they are right now. Chris Paul gives them absolutely a solidifying force for them. And you mentioned earlier about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. It's a major young talent that's a true point guard, but they're going to play him off the ball as a combo guard. So when the ball is swung from one side to the middle, the other side, he'll catch the ball in rhythm to make plays. And so probably also there's been some discussion. We'll find out more about tomorrow night. They might start three guards as far as Dennis Schroeder also might start. And so they're going to give a different look because they feel that that's the best chance of winning. Minimum, they'll start two guards, and then we'll see what they do as far as Abdul Nader and also about Andre Roberson if he comes back off injury. Their starting power forward should be Danilo Gallinari, who we know has ball skills. And then the last guy would be Steven Adams. You know, we talk about him. He's the town bully. He's an inside force right now, and he does a good job as far as staying on Rudy Gobert's body on that pick and roll action. So for the Jazz, it's going to be a hard fought game. And I agree with you that the Thunder are somewhat overrated. Underrated as far as previous seasons.
I think the one wild card for them is if there is this cloud that hangs over the team all season that they know they don't want to win games. They want to tank. They got that record haul of assets in exchange for Paul George. Are they trying to lose games and unload players? And if that's the case, Chris Paul's not going to buy in. We know he's had some issues with teammates in the past. I think Steven Adams is a guy who's going to be all in and wants to play hard. But if they're setting themselves up to lose games to get better draft picks, I don't know if you're going to get a ton of buy-in from some of those veteran players.
Well, we'll see that visually between now and the trading deadline. And a lot of times in the trading deadline, one or two teams in the NBA has a fire sale. And it could be the Thunder. It's possible. Be the Thunder where they trade some of their assets to get even future assets and keep playing their younger guys as they go forward and to reestablish their identity. But we won't know that until the next few months. In the meantime, they're going to go. Now, Chris Paul's contract's almost untradeable, almost, because of the length of it and the $40 million on average that he's making right now. Now, he earned that as far as being an all-star performer, but from the point of view of the Thunder, you don't want to pay that money to a guy that your team isn't making the playoffs.
I think then turning to game two for the Utah Jazz, they travel on the road, their first road game, and it's going to be a tough one. They go on the road at the Lakers, and I still don't know if we know much about what this Lakers team is going to look like, but it's hard to argue with a team that has two top five players in the world.
Agreed. So let's all add to that. You're talking about LeBron James and also Anthony Davis for the listeners right now, but also they added Avery Bradley, who's a good two-way player Danny Green, a knockdown shooter. Jarrett Dudley has been rejuvenated at age 34 off the bench as far as a stretch four man. Trey Daniels is this guy that's a 6'3 corner shooter. If you want to find Trey Daniels in a game, just go to the corner and you will see him as far as playing. And then Quinn Cook, the former Warriors, is now probably one of the, I'll call him a combination guard, because Rajon Rondo is right there. And then they added also Dwight Howard as an insurance policy. So they're going to be a tough out for anybody in the playoffs. They didn't make the playoffs last year. And so the Lakers, it's hard to believe, have not been in the playoffs since 2013. 6 years. Ben, it's a long time for any organization, especially a foul franchise like the Lakers.
So looking at this matchup, I mean, there's not really a good matchup for the Jazz when it comes to LeBron or when it comes to Anthony Davis. But the truth is, you know, 28, 27 other teams in the NBA can say that. I mean, maybe Kawhi Leonard can guard LeBron for stretches, and there's some big bodies, but not a lot of people have anyone who can stay in front of LeBron, and then not a lot of athletes exist in the world that are 6'10" that can challenge Anthony Davis when he wants to go down low, but also chase him around the three-point line if they decide they want to put him out there. And in fact, that might be a spot where the Boogie Cousins injury has some upside for the Lakers, because Anthony Davis is going to be forced to play some more center, and I think that creates mismatch issues. But I just don't think anyone necessarily matches up great with them. Can you just beat the other three players in their starting lineup then and think that's good enough to compete with them throughout the year?
No, the opposing team, you need more. You have to figure out how to, again, slow down LeBron. In Jazz basketball, the assignment probably will be Jeff Green to start, and then a half of Royce O'Neal, who's definitely will move his feet, but he'll bounce off his body because of the strides, the strength mismatch he has. And then it's got to be somewhat Bojan Bogdanović and maybe George Niang. So all those guys will attempt to slow down LeBron, and he's a tough matchup because he's pass happy. When he gets into the painted area, he's thinking rim attack, but if Rudy and all the other shot blockers come towards him, he'll kick it out to the corner. That's why in Laker basketball, they added those shooters, because last season they were really woefully behind as far as knockdown shooters. And these guys in the Lakers, I mentioned earlier, that they're open shooters that can make a shot to enhance the possession.
Looking at the Jazz then taking on the Lakers on the road, what's that first road game like? In an opening season, or when you've got a season with this many new guys, how much different does it feel year to year? Does the fact that these guys are veterans and have done it before, is it not an issue?
No, it's an issue because the intensity. In other words, in preseason, I call it a love fest, where everybody's playing, but they're not competing. And at home games, you're competing, but you have the element of the crowd on your side. When you go into a road mentality, it's going to be a lot of times us against them. So a huge factor will be, can the Jazz collectively get themselves mentally ready to roll as far as a group? And so the intensity that you need and velocity every moment will come to the forefront. So it's an adjustment.
And then the Jazz get to wrap up the week. They're going to debut their new mountain jerseys coming up on Saturday, the second night of a back-to-back back here in Salt Lake City, as they're going to be hosting the Sacramento Kings. And the Kings look good in the preseason, gave the Jazz some trouble. Remember early last year, the Jazz lost a game to the Kings, and it seemed to kind of be a wake-up call that, hey, teams, even if they're young, they're going to come out here and they're going to try and blitz you, and the Jazz have a target on their back now as one of the better teams in the West. I like Sacramento. I like their parts. They just extended Buddy Hield yesterday. I don't know if altogether the sum adds up to the same total of the talent of their parts, which is kind of the opposite of that saying. They've got a lot of talent. I'm not sure they always get the most out of it, but it's a good team that can seemingly beat anyone on any given night.
Let's add to that, the Sacramento Kings last year finished ninth place in the West, 39-43. So they were knocking on the playoff door. They fell slightly short. The last time the Sacramento Kings made the playoffs was 2006, which is 13 years ago. It's the longest active playoff drought in the NBA. So I mentioned about the Lakers, 6 years. These guys, the Sacramento Kings, are 13 years. The starting lineup should be De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, Marvin Bagley, and Dwayne Dedmon. And in Marvin Bagley, they have a young guy that's a big guy that's dramatically improved. I'll talk about him later on in a different segment. But he's a guy that he's talented, and he's got skills, and he's a guy that with long length and with shooting and shooting range. So as a stretch power forward, he gives them an extra punch that they never had. And I like this the way they play. And they also added Corey Joseph off the bench and Trevor Ariza and Rashawn Holmes. And all three of those guys are proven veterans that will add to their depth.
And I hope for their team, if I'm a fan of the Kings, that those guys are all kind of finally buying in with the idea of winning. Because I think you have a star in De'Aaron Fox. I think he wants to win. I think he knows how to win. I think in years past, they've had guys who weren't totally dedicated to trying to actually win when they were out there. They were trying to get money, and that's fine. I get it. It's your career. But it seems like maybe now you've got some guys who are scrapping, fighting to stay in the league, and also want to actually get on a team that wins games. And the Kings should be in a position to do that. They're going to be one of three or four teams, like we mentioned with the Thunder, that are probably knocking on the door to get that seventh or eighth seed in the West.
Also, they have a new coach in Luke Walton. So in their world, Sacramento Kings, the newness of a coaching staff is only going to add, they believe, to their jump start to make the playoffs. New coaches, younger players that are more slightly seasoned, and a new awareness of it. And so the West is loaded, and they won 39 games last year, and they think that they could reverse that and win 43. But the West is so incredibly, as far as stacked against everything, and we'll see how it all plays out. I have the Kings right now winning 36 games, even lesser than last year, even though they're a better team because everyone else around them has also got dramatically better. The top 10 in the West are absolutely dominant as far as to each other, and they could beat most of the teams in the East. Most, not all, most.
Do you think every team does that? Does every team lose two or three wins off their win total from last season just because the rest of the league or because the rest of the West has gotten so tough?
Very much. Yeah, I have nobody in both Eastern Conference and the Western Conference with 60 wins, which is unheard of. So I have the leader in the Western Conference, as we speak right now this morning, the L.A. Clippers with 56 wins, and in the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks with 57 wins. Remember those days where the Warriors winning 65, 72 games, 71 games? That's really yesteryear because everybody is really loaded as far as their world, and the record could be lesser, but you're a dramatic better team, and then we'll see how it plays in the playoffs. The playoffs, there's nothing regular about the playoffs because it's so different as far as the intensity and who you play against, and the individual matchups, and the collective as far as schemes to take away your first and second option offensively.
You mentioned the Warriors. We've talked about the Kings. We talked about Luka Doncic earlier. I mean, I think those three teams, plus the Thunder, those four teams are really going to be fighting to get that final playoff spot or final two playoff spots, and it's going to be brutal going down the stretch. I think that's probably where the Warriors are. Maybe they're better than that. Maybe I'm sleeping on the duo of Draymond Green and Steph Curry, who might have an MVP season this year. But I just think it's going to be fun. I just don't think there's going to be a big drop-off midseason like there was last year where it seemed like we knew who the top eight teams were going to be.
Very much. Also, let's put in the mix right now the Dallas Mavericks. The Dallas Mavericks are a good team. They won 33 games last year, and they're going to be right there as far as trying to get that eighth seed. And with Luka Doncic, they have absolutely a star player that has tremendous ball skills to make his teammates better. And then with Kristaps Porzingis, the former Knickerbocker at 7'3", they have a major talent that can block shots, run the floor, make momentum plays, and help them. So let's not count out the Dallas Mavericks as far as they go forward.
With, you know, 12 good teams that we're talking about right now in the Western Conference, it's going to be a bummer because inevitably one or two serious injuries is going to eliminate two of those teams. Like Kristaps Porzingis not being able to play all of last year when the Mavericks were able to acquire him. Unfortunately, that's going to dictate what the West ends up looking like. I think the Jazz, for the most part, unless it's Rudy Gobert, are probably a little bit more immune to that because they are relatively deep. They've got five guys that are top 60 players in the NBA.
Agreed. And that's good for the Jazz as far as giving them quality depth. Because there are injuries. The question is, are they major or is that player out for two or three weeks with a severe sprained ankle? And that's when it's so important. You're the 11th man of a team, and now you're the seventh man of a team, and you're playing on a long East Coast road trip. and that's when you've got to perform. And the better teams have quality depth. Let's get back for 1 second, Ben, about the Dallas Mavericks, because the local tie. Let's not forget that DeLon Wright, the former University of Utah star, is the starting point guard for Dallas, and also they added Seth Curry, who's Stephen Curry's younger brother, who's a knockdown shooter, has some great moments with the Portland Trailblazers. So, and so they added two guys on perimeter that really are effective players, and they still have on the team J.J. Barrera, who we know that the way he plays can contribute, and then the young guy, Jalen Brunson, on perimeter. So they have some good players as far as depth right there if someone gets injured. So I do like Dallas as far as possibly being a surprise to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I like DeLon Wright in that role to just kind of do all the dirty work. Not that Doncic can't do it or isn't a tough player, but just his ability, what DeLon Wright can do defensively and be a distributor, I think is really going to help them, because he doesn't need to score to be effective. And between Kristaps and Luka Doncic, you don't need him to score a whole lot.
And that scoring a whole lot would be roughly 10 to 12 points.
Yep.
If DeLon Wright gets 10 to 12 points per game, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, and 1.7 steals in 31 minutes, that's absolutely uplifting, because he's a good defensive player, he's in the passing lane, and he's a ball mover. So a lot of times you could be an assist person, and you only pass the ball when you get an assist, versus someone like Chris Paul, and you still see tomorrow night. Besides innately assist passing, he also moves the ball. And that was Stockton also in yesteryear, where he assist passer, to say the least, but he's a ball mover. And that's DeLon Wright. And that helps the team fluidity, especially if a team is struggling to score. If that ball moves, that gives someone else a chance to what? To make a catch in rhythm to make a basketball play.
Season starts tonight. It would be foolish to skip over some preseason predictions. And we can look at an awards list, because the Jazz should have a couple of players, at least one, in competition again to come in and win Defensive Player of the Year award. That would be Rudy Gobert. But, Coach, where do you want to start with your preseason award predictions?
Let's first go right now with the Sixth Man of the Year.
Okay.
The Sixth Man of the Year is perennial. He's one of the best players in the last 10 years off the bench. Before I say his name, everybody loves him. He could score 14 points in a playoff game in a windstorm. We're talking about Lou Williams, of last year's winner of the L.A. Clippers. And so there'll be times on the floor when they have all these star players, and those guys are going to pass the ball to Lou Williams, and he's going to do some serious damage.
I wonder if Joe Ingles is going to have gaudy enough stats to really throw his name into the competition for this award, but Joe Ingles just has Manu Ginobili written all over him with his ability to come in and fill whatever role, whether it's one night he needs to be a scorer, whether it's one night he needs to come in and give you 8 assists, which he did a couple of times off the bench in the preseason. Unless the Jazz feel like at some point they have to move him into the starting lineup, he should be in the top 3 or 4 names that should be a preseason favorite to win this Sixth Man of the Year award.
He'll get votes, absolutely. But Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell is also his sidekick. The Clippers have two of the best guys off the bench in the world on the same team. And so those guys, when they come in, when they're in the game, they play in lockstep, and they absolutely jumpstart their second unit. And you can make a narrative that both those guys really, they're starters in ability, but off the bench, they're absolutely devastating. All right, next one. The Executive of the Year, meaning in management. And there's so many people that are qualified, but I'm going to lean towards Sean Marks of the Brooklyn Nets.
It's hard to argue with landing Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Then again, we don't see Kevin Durant this year, so maybe that ends up being an issue.
Well, also just the way their roster is constructed, and they have a good team. They were a good team last year, making the playoffs. They lost in the first round to the Philadelphia 76ers, but they have a lot of good pieces there. And Sean Marks inherited a crazy situation, and he made the best of it. Last year, the Nets go 42-40. They're the sixth seed. It was their first playoff bid since 2015. And with Kyrie Irving, also Garrett Temple added. They also added Taurean Prince. They added David Nwaba, who's actually underrated as far as defensive player, and DeAndre Jordan. And then Kevin Durant's going to sit out the whole season. And then Wilson Chandler had that drug issue. He's sitting out the first 25 games. But they have a talent, and I'm going to lean towards the Executive of the Year.
And the other name that has to be in there is Michael Winger. He's the GM for the Los Angeles Clippers. And when you land Kawhi Leonard and you land Paul George in one offseason, you're going to be a favorite. And they should win 55-plus games or around 55 games this year. And if they can do that and get a top seed in the West in the playoffs, it's going to be hard to argue with that as well.
And how important is management? Management and coaching have to be in lockstep, and that makes Utah Jazz basketball very, very unique because both the management group and also the coaching staff do work together in harmony. They might not always agree, but as I always say, agree, disagree, align. And that's the better teams, in, whether it's the NFL or the NBA, they get it. And that's what the Brooklyn Nets, the Utah Jazz, the San Antonio Spurs, the Clippers, the Milwaukee Bucks, these are all teams that are solid. And some of the seasons mentioned, I call them turnaround artists. So the Brooklyn Nets, they gave away the company store with Kevin Garnett and also with Paul Pierce and Darren Williams, and then they're able to rebound less than 5 years later to be, again, a viable option in the East.
Have you crossed paths with Jerry West much?
Over the years, yes. I used to work together with him when I was the Memphis Grizzlies.
Okay.
When he was the general manager, and he was leaving about 2 months later, but I've seen him many times over the years, but we actually worked together when I was with the Grizzlies.
He's one of the few guys I've been honestly starstruck by when I saw him at Las Vegas Summer League, because you're around the league and you just kind of, you expect to see faces and you expect to see general managers and executives. And for some reason, seeing Jerry West with his, you know, his white hair, and it is bright white, great head of hair. It just, for some reason, it just kind of froze me in my steps.
Well, also, as Ed right now, he's 81 years old and just shows you that he's a guy that's absolutely a lifer. And he was an incredible, amazing player. So, again, in a playoff game, he could score 50 points in a playoff game for at that time, the L.A. Lakers. And ironically, in Jazz basketball, Howard Huntley, the late great Howard Huntley, was his teammate when the Lakers moved from Minneapolis to Los Angeles for the start of the 60-61 season. And he was a huge part of that success. It was his rookie season. Let's fast forward, and literally almost 60 years later, he's still involved in the NBA. Ironically, with the team cross town, the L.A. Clippers.
What's the next award you want to get to?
Next award is going to be the Comeback Player of the Year. This is the guy that was injured, and now he's going to play, hopefully, this person, a whole bunch of games. That would be Kristaps Porzingis. So Kristaps Porzingis for the Dallas Mavericks gives them a major talent. I'll call him a center, but he's really a stretch big the way he plays. He's a three-point shooter. He's an amazing shot blocker. He runs the floor in transition both ways, either to score or to block shots or defensive rebound, and he's got basketball skills. So he's out all of last season, and now this year with the Dallas Mavericks playing in unison with Doncic will help them become Comeback Player of the Year.
I think the only other name that would really be in the running that's going to put up big stats after coming back from an injury is Victor Oladipo in Indiana.
Very much, yeah. But he's not coming back till probably December 10th, 15th or so. So, and I hope he does, because he's a major talent. That guy's got a winning spirit. Now, so he'll miss probably, I'm just guessing right now, between 20 games or so to start this season. And the Pacers will absolutely use good judgment. They're not going to rush him back, because in their world, that they're going to try to get him back when he's 100% off injury. And he's a major player. Porzingis right now set out last year. He should be ready to roll starting tomorrow night.
And that's a good thing for the Dallas Mavericks. He really is, when he's on the floor, one of the best players in the NBA. Next award.
Next award's going to be Breakout Star. This is where a guy that is vastly underrated, and especially if he gets on television as far as in the playoffs. So a lot of times, even though everybody knows these guys' names, when you get to the playoffs, people say, I never knew so-and-so was that good. Because now it's laser focus on that person's skills, and in the visual art of it, you're seeing that player play all the time. And that would be from the Brooklyn Nets, Caris LeVert. So Caris LeVert is a 6'5", two guard that's is amazingly athletic. And he's got a tremendous jump shot, and he got some bounce to his game, and he's going to probably average 20 points a game for them. But he's got big-time talent. He was injured 2 years ago. He came back last year. He really played well for them. This should be a breakout year for him.
Yeah, generally it goes to a guy who assumes that third role on a good playoff team, like Pascal Siakam last year and what he was able to do with the Toronto Raptors, playing next to Kyle Lowry and, of course, Kawhi Leonard. He stepped up and showed that he could be that guy every night that stepped up. Another name is one we've already talked about, who I think gave, what, the Grizzlies 3 triple-doubles in 4 games to end the season last year, and that's DeLon Wright. If the Dallas Mavericks can be serious playoff contenders all season long and Kristaps or Luka Doncic makes an all-star game, maybe DeLon Wright's that number three guy that they have that comes in and puts up triple-double numbers like Rajon Rondo and shows that he can do it every night, and he might be in competition for that because he's going to get a big role boost.
Very much also, and that's what you like about him, his versatility, the ability to play both sides of the ball. And it all starts with the optic of the America's consciousness of the love basketball, that they say these words, "I never knew so-and-so was that good." And now also, that was last year, Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon is ironically now on the Indiana Pacers, and at some backcourt, him and Victor Oladipo, both those guys have winning games, and they're highly skilled, and they both of them try to defend and play their position and win a lot of mismatch rebounding situations. So Brogdon was also in that group, and now that was last season, so now it's DeLon Wright. They're very similar with good all-around games.
What's our next award?
Our next award, most improved.
Okay.
This is a guy that often would be someone that is a young, talented guy, and now he makes this dramatic leap, usually from year 1 to 2 or from year 2 to 3. I just described Marvin Bagley of the Sacramento Kings. So Marvin Bagley is a tremendous talent that is his second year now in the NBA. He's going to play a lot, and that as a starter, as a stretch big. He's going to average probably over 20 points a game and about 9 rebounds. He tried to defend his position. He's a shot blocker, and he has a spirit about running the floor. So I'm going to lean towards him getting the honor as most improved.
Yeah, was it De'Aaron Fox from the Kings who won it last year? It could be the same repetition where we see Marvin Bagley, who just had far too small of a role last year. He deserved a bigger role, I thought. But yeah, under Luke Walton, and he looked great in the preseason against the Jazz. I think you're going to see a lot of good things from Marvin Bagley, and he's number 2 overall pick. He's mega talented.
He's mega talented, right? And you pick high in the lottery, you're saying philosophically that our guy that we picked is ultra talented, and that with a normal growth progression, that's usually 1 to 3 years, that we think that guy could be minimum a winning starter, if not a star. See, a winning starter, that would be the lowest, if not a star. And that would be like Marvin Bagley. Minimum would be what? A winning starter. But he's enough talent, he could be a star. And that star tells me that they're going to go to him in crunch time. And in their world, we mentioned earlier, if he make the playoffs, then he'd be more optic as far as seeing him. The next category, Ben, would be Defensive Player of the Year. It should be for the third straight year, Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz. Rudy Gobert is an amazing defensive player, both as far as positionally, but also as far as his energy. He takes it personal when someone scores in the paint against either him or his floor mates. And he has a lot of pride in himself, and that's what makes him so special defensively, where he does impact the game, and he absolutely takes away most of the layups that teams try to take against the Jazz. So he should get Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, I think a lot of that will come down to what the Jazz final stats look like at the end of the season. In the last 3 years, they've had the 1 spot, the 2 spot, and the 3 spot as far as best defensive teams in the NBA go. If they drop to 5th or 6th this season, do voters ding him and just say, you know what, we want to see a new face win that award? And I think the next favorite would probably be Joel Embiid in Philadelphia.
Probably. But I'm making a point that Joel Embiid doesn't have the same urgency that Rudy has. Joel Embiid tries to, now again, he's a good defensive player, but we're talking elite now. He tries to outscore you offensively.
Yep.
So Joel Embiid is more of an offensive-minded player with strong defense. Rudy is an elite defender with a evolving offense. So it's almost a mentality that you have during the game. And so I would definitely lean towards Rudy. If that was the case, if Rudy didn't get it, I'm going definitely Kawhi Leonard then. Because Kawhi Leonard could guard anybody in the NBA, 1 through 5.
Yeah, Paul George is going to be in that running, too. The Clippers are going to have 2 guys on the perimeter that could be Defensive Player of the Year award finalists.
Next one, Rookie of the Year. I'm going to lean towards this guy's going to get a lot of playing time. We'll have the ball skills from the New York Knicks, R.J. Barrett, formerly of Duke. And so I think he's going to get it. Now, Zion Williamson, because of the most recent injury, they'll bring him back roughly probably during late November, probably late November, early December. So he'll miss again, I'm just guesstimating, roughly 17 to 19 games. So I'm going to lean towards Barrett of the New York Knickerbockers, we know is a combination guard. 1-2-3, the way he plays, he's going to have the ball to showcase his skills. He's a major young talent.
What do you make of the Zion injury? It's just that body size we've never seen, that type of power, that type of leaping ability. It's incredible. But the reason you don't see it is because bodies aren't designed to work that way. So he did it through college, and he was absolutely incredible, but he's so much bigger than everybody at that level that it's not hard for him to dominate in 30 games you play twice a week. Now the NBA, it's just a different grind. I hope he can find a way to either lose weight and get to a spot where he's healthy to be able to continue to play that way, or just find some way to reduce the way he uses his body so you can keep him on the floor.
It's a huge dilemma as far as, so again, it's the reason why he's such a unique player, because of his body weight, where people bounce off him when they're against good defensive players, where he's so strong and he's absolutely bouncy to his game. Now the question is, by losing weight, it becomes slightly less effective, or has it helped him long term? And I'm sure there's people with the doctors of the Pelicans and all the people around the NBA, they're all trying to find the exactness of it to try to get him on the floor, because the Pelicans need him, and so is the NBA, because he's an exciting player. For the listeners right now, if you didn't hear about it, that Zion Williamson has a lateral meniscus tear on his right knee, probably will come back sometime in December. And again, they'll use good judgment. As far as either, if he's not ready 100%, they'll absolutely hold him out until they feel that he's able to play very well without any injury.
As far as RJ Barrett goes, there's no reason for the Knicks not to just give him the keys to the franchise and let him get shots up. As long as he's playing the right way, which I think is some of the hard part. Sometimes last year it seems like Kevin Knox had too long of a leash. If you let him play the right way, there's no reason not to give him as much opportunity as possible to win. The other name I'd throw in there who had a great preseason is Tyler Hero out of Kentucky down in Miami.
Yes, very underrated player. Great pick for them, the 14th pick of the draft. And now with the Miami Heat feuding with Deion Waiters, as far as him being a malcontent already, is that he's obviously trying to be traded. That's done by design by his agent trying to force the Heat to trade him. Tyler Hero is a guy from Kentucky that's a knockdown shooter, and he is talented. So he'll get some good statistics. And also the Miami Heat, underrated team. They really are a team. And it makes them so interesting. You can never count them out as far as those guys in the game. Those guys have a lot of grit. And it all starts with the coaching staff and led by management, Pat Riley.
Next award.
Next award would be the MVP. Now the MVP will be down to two people, because both these guys are an elite team. They're leaders of teams that they think could be the NBA championship. Number two, I'm going to go for the Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm going to split for 1 second. I'm going to pause about him, because he's MVP last year, and they got knocked out in the playoffs. This is all based on regular season. And this is the great debate: do you wait until after the playoffs to decide who's MVP? And the reason why they don't do that is because sometimes a guy that had an incredible year didn't make the playoffs or got knocked out in the first round. They don't want to penalize that. So Giannis, I think, is going to be number two. Number one is going to be Kawhi Leonard of the L.A. Clippers. I think that he's going to have a great regular season, and those guys will probably have the best record in the West, and he'll showcase his absolutely versatility.
Yeah, I think the question with Giannis is, which way do the Milwaukee Bucks go? Now, losing Malcolm Brogdon was a big deal, but they brought most of their pieces back. They added some nice role players. Robin Lopez, the brother of Brooke Lopez, they're going to be playing together. They added Kyle Korver, which I think just gives more space to Giannis. Do they take what they learned last year by getting eliminated and realized, hey, we can't just be so heavily reliant on Giannis and we need to find ways to better support him? Or do they go in the, not the tank, but necessarily to say, hey, that was our chance. Things aren't going as easily as they were last year. People figure out Mike Budenholzer's system, and they just kind of come back to earth a little bit. And generally, teams tend to do that. They had the best record in the league, won 60 games last year. They're either going to keep that up and take the next step and win a championship, or they're going to fall back to 54 wins and kind of be a disappointment with a short window.
I'm going to lean towards them still being an elite team. They also added Wesley Matthews, another three-point shooter. The way the Milwaukee Bucks play, they space the floor literally five out and no one inside, meaning either mid-block or in short corner spacing. And they use Giannis's incredible length and ball skills to force the defense to help out. If not, he's on top of the rim on a bounce and a half once he goes from the foul line extended. And they stretch the floor out with Brook Lopez. The only guy they have in the team that's not really a knockdown shooter would be his brother Robin Lopez, who's more of a rebounder. So the way they play with George Hill, Eric Bledsoe, Chris Middleton, Giannis, and Brook Lopez, and with Kyle Korver and Wesley Matthews, they have a bunch of people that can shoot from outside, all of them, and that helps them. I think they're going to be a force in the East.
Next award.
Next award would be the NBA champions. Who's going to be? So I'm going to lean towards the LA Clippers. The LA Clippers in the West will survive the playoffs, and Milwaukee Bucks in the East get to the NBA Finals with the Clippers beating the Bucks 4-2.
I think the Clippers have to be the favorite to come out of the West, just because we saw Kawhi right now he's honestly playing as well as anybody in the world. And then you give him a player like Paul George next to him, and he seems to find a way. I don't want to say he makes players around him better, but he's such a force that he opens up opportunities for guys around him. And I think teams that have played Paul George have always been able to make him the number one target, even when he was in Oklahoma City with Russell Westbrook. You just can't make Paul George your number one target. And if he's second on your scouting report, he's just going to torch most teams.
Correct. With that said, though, the Clippers have absolutely such a deep team. Those guys, the way they play, and let's not forget, Doc Rivers is really a terrific coach. So Doc Rivers, he's a proven winner, and he'll steer the ship for them. So they start the Clippers, Patrick Beverley, Landry Shamet, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and probably Ivica Zubac. Then off the bench should be Lou Williams, vastly underrated Rodney McGruder, Mo Harkless, Patrick Patterson, and Montrezl Harrell. And an 11th man should be Jermichael Green. So, Ben, these guys are basically 11 deep. All those guys we just mentioned, you can make a narrative, they could be starters in all teams. So numbers 6 through 11, those guys have all started on previous teams.
And I think the majority of those guys ends up playing 70 games this season. They strategically rest players where they need to, maybe 65 for Kawhi and Paul George. And if you do that, they're going to be ready to go in the postseason, which is what the Raptors did. And they didn't escape unscathed, but they won a championship and looked pretty dominant doing it.
Also, you know, they have another guy on their team that will get some playing time. He's a very good young player that's got talent and he's pass happy. I'll call him a combo guard, Terrence Mann. The 40th pick from Florida State, and the Clippers like his versatility, and he will play for them in, you know, some of the games. And if they future out, he's a guy that they think that they can play in a rotation for them someday.
Yeah, and we'll see. They didn't end up having to trade him in the deal to move for Paul George, but if Jerome Robinson can step up, he was a lottery pick last year too. That just could be one of those extra bodies that you realize, hey, they're just loaded. They're so deep, and it pushes them over the edge.
Very much. Now, let's not forget, they lost last year in the first round in a hard-fought series to the very savvy Golden State Warriors, 4-2. And so some of the players that are there remember those, that awful losses to the Warriors, who we know they're battle-tested, to say the least. The Warriors have been to the Western Conference champions 5 straight years and been to the finals for 5 straight years. And that's hard to do in this generation. That's absolutely hard to do. And that's so the Clippers lost to them in a really a hard-fought series. So they're going to be much more alert as far as they go forward.
That'll do it for my conversation with Coach Gordy Chiesa. Again, find him on Twitter at GChiesa. Oh, my. Huge thanks to the coach for joining us, as always. Really quickly, if you're going to be going to the game on Wednesday, stop on by and see us out in front of the Triad Center, 300 West South Temple. It's Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30. We have the big home opener party out on the plaza. Come on by. Music, prizes, free pizza. If you're heading into the game, make sure you stop by and see us. It's all brought to you by KSL Sports, where you can find all of our content, kslsports.com. Again, the big home opener party on the plaza, 5:30 to 7:30, 300 West and South Temple. You can't miss us. Stop on by and say hi. That'll do it. for another edition of Jazz Notes and the Jazz Notes podcast. Make sure you tune in as we're trying to get these out every couple of days for you on KSLSports.com.